Hello and welcome to the Thorax Podcast. I'm Kate Dearmady, Thorax social media editor and podcast host. Today I'm talking to Dr. Patrick Goodley, respiratory registrar and PhD student at the University of Manchester. Hi Patrick, thank you for coming to talk to us.
Hello Kate, pleasure to be here.
We're talking today about your paper, which was published towards the end of last year in Thorax, which was looking at invitation strategies in lung cancer screening. If we could start then by, if you could give us an overview of what you did in your study.
The paper was basically an observational cohort study of a screening program that started in Manchester in 2019. Manchester had done a kind of a pilot screening study back in 2016, and then this was kind of the bigger rollout to the chunk of Manchester, the north and east sides of the city, where everyone in 35 GP practices all stuck together were invited to lung cancer screening. And the way it worked was that everyone was sent a letter. If you're between the ages 55 and 80, and then people who were ever smokers, it said in the letter to contact the service if they wanted to consider a lung health check. And then targeted lung cancer screening was done on the basis of those lung health checks. And what this paper focuses on was the way we invited them, kind of how that panned out, how many people came to each stage, response rate to the initial invitation, who came for a lung health check, and who got lung cancer, and who came back the second year for the next screening round.
My understanding is there's not a national lung cancer screening program at the moment in the UK, but it's in the process of being set up, and different areas, so Manchester, for example, have been running their sort of own lung cancer screening for a time.
Exactly, right? Yeah.
And what is the method of invitation, or what the established method for invitation to screening within the lung cancer screening program as is?
So just to address the where we're up to in the UK at the moment, so there's not a national screening program per se. The National Screening Committee about a year ago said, yes, there is enough evidence and it's cost effective enough to have as a national screening program, but that hasn't quite rolled out yet. The way that's happening is there were smaller kind of studies from around the time of the Manchester pilot. Different cities did different studies and programs in the next few years, and they got bigger and bigger. And currently, the targeted lung health check program is England's NHS England's service, where about 50 sites at the moment now provide lung cancer screening around England, and that number is increasing, and it's working towards full coverage and eventually of the UK, hopefully, in the coming 5 years or so. So that's where we're up to. There's a lot of momentum, covers a lot of the country so far. It's been 1 million people invited, and it's doing really well as a program. So the study talks about the Manchester program in 2019, which was kind of one of the first sites of the targeted lung health check program kind of adopted into its bigger project. So it was kind of one of the first NHS-based screening programs covering a large area.
I'm sorry, just but in its inception, is the targeted lung check the population-based screening? Is it everybody between those ages? And then your paper is looking at how we can make that more efficient.
So the targeted lung health check program, the TLHC NHS program, is everyone in an age range. It's actually 55 to 74, which is a bit narrower than we went up to 80 in this paper. And it also based on smoking status. So currently, only people who have ever smoked are invited in the first place, whereas we sent letters to everyone basically because we weren't sure that smoking records that you have access to are that reliable, and you don't miss people. There may be hard to reach populations that have less reliable smoking records with their GPs, so just sent letters to everyone and let them respond in our setting.
Okay, so then what did you find? What were your main findings?
So found that there's quite good response rate. So half people who had ever smoked got in touch on the basis of their invitation letter. And of those people, 83% came for a lung health check. And that's really good. It's encouraging. It's similar to some other programs or trials that have been operating in the UK. And comparisons are always made between the UK and America. America's been doing lung cancer screening, or it's been recommended to do lung cancer screening for longer, but their uptake rates are still a lot lower, often below 10%. So 50% response rate, 83% uptake rate is quite encouraging. And then 83% of the people who could come back the next year did come for the next round of screening. So that was all encouraging. We looked at kind of risk factors for attendance and non-attendance, or uptake and non-uptake. And one of the kind of most striking findings was that people who currently smoke rather than people who used to smoke were half as likely to respond to invitation, even though those are the people who are often at highest risk of lung cancer.
Do you have an idea of why that is? I suppose it's a psychology question. But...
Yeah, there's a lot of behavioural work going on about how best to kind of get through the barriers that exist in that population to, I guess, inform people enough that there are benefits from screening for them. So one of the biggest kind of research centers is in London. Dr. Sammy Quaife does a lot of work on this and has published a bunch of things. Things that affect smokers that can present barriers to screening include fear, fatalism, and stigma. So smokers can feel that, firstly, if they have lung cancer, that's a death sentence. It's their fault. There's a stigma attached to smoking, as we know. They don't want to create a fuss on something they feel that they may have kind of caused for themselves. Obviously, it's a lot more complicated than that. Nicotine dependency is a big problem. And even if someone's diagnosed with lung cancer, they might feel that the treatments don't have the potential to help them. So those kind of negative perceptions present a lot of barriers, and there's a lot of work about finding targetable parts of the invitation and screening pathway to improve uptake.
Mm-hmm. I think it was also men and younger patients in your paper who had less uptake.
So men are 10% less likely than women to respond to invitation. Men have a shorter life expectancy, many reasons for that, care of their own health is part of it.
Yeah, more likely to smoke still, are they?
So historically, men have been the bulk of the smoking and lung cancer burden, but it's been evening up in recent decades. So targeting women is a big priority too.
And I was wondering if you wanted to talk about the socioeconomic aspect of your paper, because I know that was one of the things, is that your cohort of patients are a very deprived cohort, and how that influences lung cancer lung cancer screening, but also lung cancer generally.
Yeah, deprivation's a huge problem. It's kind of, lung cancer is the biggest driver of inequality and life expectancy in the UK. That just came out from a recent study, and kind of the lowest, most deprived fifth of the population are three times more likely to get lung cancer, and those that do get lung cancer are more likely to die from it. So deprivation is a big problem because of its association with smoking, but also other things, availability and uptake of healthcare generally. And it's kind of hard to put a number on kind of what exactly it is about deprivation that relates to lung cancer beyond smoking, but that association is there and it's strong. So yeah, I mean, the Manchester population that was invited was deliberately the north and east sides of the city, where there is high burden of deprivation and the highest lung cancer mortality outcomes in the region. So that area was targeted first, and yes, 71% of them were in the most deprived quintile of the population of the UK. So it's kind of an enriched population to look at for the impact of deprivation. One of the research kind of limitations is that we don't have a less deprived chunk of population to compare them directly to, but the deprivation of this region definitely will play into the results that we've got.
Are you able to tell us a bit more about how you looked into doing a targeted versus a population approach for screening?
So the other kind of angle of the paper, apart from describing the uptake, was that we looked at different ways of inviting people. So sending letters to everybody in an area and letting them respond to tell you that they've smoked and or not smoked is one way. Sends a lot of letters, bit of a cost attached to that perhaps. So other more targeted approaches, which the TLHC program is kind of employing, would be to use GP smoking status records to decide who gets a letter inviting them. So we had this cohort that was invited by population basis, but we also had their GP records. So we looked at what would have happened if we'd just invited fewer people based on their GP smoking record. And then we compared what GP smoking record said to what people told us their smoking status had been on the phone, because some never smokers even phoned to say that they'd never smoked and stuff like that. So that's a kind of additional data that we had to look at. And well, firstly, there is some discordance between the GP smoking records and what people tell us. What people tell us is fallible as well. They may forget exactly if they smoked a long time ago, or but GP records don't necessarily update that often or reflect kind of people's lifetime of smoking. So there was of GP records where they were recorded to have been a smoker, 11% of them told us that they'd never smoked. And then the other way around, where GP record didn't think people were smokers, 16% told us that they had smoked of the people who contacted us. So there may be implications of if you're missing people who have smoked by sending letters to people that you think have smoked, that might kind of deprive some people of screening that would otherwise warrant it. That said, we looked at the risk profiles of people who have a GP record of not having smoked, and even those who had smoked and came to screening had lower risk scores overall, and indeed got fewer cancers. Fewer cases of lung cancer were detected in screening. So it may be that from a kind of cost effectiveness point of view, it is reasonable to not invite people whose GPs think they never smoked. The cost effectiveness analysis wasn't included in this paper, but that's something that can factor into service planning going forwards.
And that is the approach that's recommended, is it, to use GP records?
Yeah, so it kind of vindicates that.
Yeah.
Hopefully there are also in parallel measures to improve the accuracy of GP records going forwards, and I know some people are working on that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no screening program will ever be perfect, and you're offering a big service to lots of people, and most of them don't have any cancer, so you need to think of the cost implications of health resource utilization. So it may be reasonable to not invite people who you don't think have ever smoked.
And then if we could just talk more generally about lung cancer screening, you mentioned that it's only been recommended as of last year nationally. What's changed in the evidence from, I think it was previously in 2007 when the UK reviewed whether they should have a lung cancer screening program or not, and they decided no in 2007, and then last year yes. Do you know what's changed in the evidence?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of studies published in the meantime. There were 9 randomized controlled trials looking at the efficacy of low-dose CT lung cancer screening. And so the trials have included about 100,000 people, and none of those have been published as of 2007, whereas they've all come out since. And they, when put together in a meta-analysis, show 20% reduction in lung cancer mortality. So evidence for efficacy has come in. And then in order for it to be a national screening program, cost effectiveness needs to also meet the kind of willingness to pay threshold in any given health system. So updated cost effectiveness analysis was done and showed that you get a lot of bang for your buck, actually. There are different ways of doing screening and different costs attached, but basically it's only a few thousand pounds per quality adjusted life year gain. So that's another reason that it's now viable in the UK.
And I wanted to ask about the mortality, because I think I read that although it decreases lung cancer mortality, there's no good evidence that it decreases overall mortality. And then I wasn't sure if that was because the studies are not sufficiently powered or if that's just true.
Yeah, so statistically, it's very hard to show overall survival benefit kind of from most things. There is, well, I was quite surprised to learn this, but there's no evidence that any screening program for cancer improves overall survival. So breast, bowel, all that stuff that exists.
Okay.
Can't demonstrate that. So basically the effect of the screening just gets lost in the world of everything else that happens to people's health. And that's not kind of the accepted or feasible outcome to expect to be able to demonstrate. Some modeling studies showed you'd need kind of hundreds of thousands of people in an RCT and to follow them up for decades, basically, so to show an overall survival benefit. So disease-specific mortality is, I think, a reasonable bar to set.
And the other thing is, I don't know if you know, because I looked at the uptake of other screening programs, they're not as high as actually as I thought they would be. So I think the breast cancer screening program is about 60% uptake and cervical cancer screening is about 70%, something like that. Do you know if they've increased? They're obviously very well established screening programs. Do you know if the uptake's increased over time and we might expect to see similar uptake in lung cancer as it becomes more established?
So there's been a lot of work in screening for everything to try and improve the information that's available to people and the ease of access to screening services. And in the UK, fortunately, cost isn't a barrier. So not everyone needs to take any service that's available. That's fine. People should have choices as long as those are as informed as possible. And otherwise, from a lung cancer point of view, kind of the special barriers that exist for people who smoke are still something that we need to work on. But yeah, it's not too far behind other screening programs uptake.
And what are you planning on doing next? What are you looking at the moment? Any research you're doing?
Gosh, there's lots of things going on in screening. Generally, one of the things I'm interested in is kind of how to get the most bang for your buck from screening. So looking at who stands to benefit the most from a diagnosis of lung cancer through screening is a bit of a complicated question, because we use risk prediction models to guess what someone's risk of lung cancer is. And often the people who have the highest risk of lung cancer have the highest risk of dying of other things, cardiovascular disease, they've smoked a lot, they're older. So trying to tinker with the risk prediction tools that we use to focus those efforts on the people who will gain the most life years from a screen-detected cancer, and that the benefit would outweigh the harms of screening. Screening's not without costs to society, but also the individual if you over-diagnose things and over-investigate and over-treat things that wouldn't have harmed them in their lifetime otherwise. So looking at kind of, the life years gained approach to selection for screening is something that's interesting. And there's a lot of kind of energy going into optimizing how often you screen people. Do you use personalized risk scores to decide if you get screened every year, every 2 years, so on? Whether information within CT scans can tell you someone's lung cancer risk, even if there's no cancer on there. A lot of angles. But it's an exciting field, and yeah, it's a great kind of community in the UK of lung cancer screening.
I think it's the third podcast we've done now on screening.
Yeah. No, there's so many angles to tackle. It's a real kind of growth area, obviously. Yeah. And that means the challenges are there as well. So plenty to do.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for coming to talk to us.
Glad you've taken an interest, and it's great to be here.
Thanks for listening to the Thorax podcast. If you want to read the paper, it's open access in the January issue this month, and we'll leave a link down below. We publish monthly podcasts about some of the best content of the journal. And if you don't want to miss an episode, please subscribe. We'd also love to hear from you, so please get in touch through our social media channels. Thank you, and see you next month.